This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Are you ready to break the mold and redefine what family travel can look like? Well, join us in this episode as we dive into an inspiring conversation with Elise, the powerhouse mom behind @3KidsTravel. Get ready to hear how she and her family of five are conquering the globe, from Tokyo's bustling streets to the serene landscapes of Cappadocia and beyond. Elise shares her top travel tips for families, including how to balance work, school, and travel, the essentials you must pack, and why booking flights first can really make or break your travel plans. If you've ever thought you have to put your travel plans on hold when you have kids, Elise's stories and tips will leave you feeling motivated and ready to embark on your next adventure. Don't miss out on her incredible journey of transforming family vacations into unforgettable cultural experiences, and get ready to learn how to revolutionize your own family's travel adventures.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome, everybody, to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch, and I have another great one for you today and another amazing guest. This is going to be with Elise, and she's with @3KidsTravel. That's her handle on Instagram. If you remember back in episode 29 with Jordan and Courtney, they were the frugal and free travelers. They were the ones that made the introduction and said, hey, we got to have her on the show. So I'm super excited to have her today. She's a mom who shares the ups and downs of family travel, itineraries, travel tips, and she's got three girls, and she's here to share it all. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the show, Elise.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here and chatting.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Elise, let's just start with a little bit of background, right? Where currently in the world are you? Where are you from? You know, what do you do for a living? Let's get a little bit of background so the listeners can level with you and say, hell, you know what? She's just like me.
So we live in Salt Lake City, Utah right now. I grew up in Short Hills, New Jersey, which is like 25 miles outside of New York City. My husband's from Maryland, DC area, and we met in California. So we kind of have jumped across the country in our dating and marriage kind of life. And yeah, we've got three girls, ages 15, 13, and 10. And So I run a publishing company. I have a boutique publishing company in Salt Lake. That's what I do for my work, other than when we're traveling, kind of documenting travel, that kind of stuff. And my husband's a tech entrepreneur. So
very cool.
We have some flexibility in traveling because of our jobs, but at the same time, we don't. So, you know, we try to fit it in when we can.
Balance it out. Got it.
Plus our kids are in school.
Okay. Very nice. So live in, I guess you kind of would call it Salt Lake, a little bit of the Midwest. I mean, it's more west than mid, but a little bit of the
Mountain
Midwest.
Mountain West.
Exactly. Mountain West. I like Salt Lake. I'm a snowboarder, so I love getting out there on the slopes. Park City is one of the coolest mountains I've ever been to. And so you started on the East Coast, met on the West Coast. Now you're Mountain West. And so you said you're three girls, you guys travel as much as you can as it works with their school schedule and as well as your work schedule. And I know you said your girls seem like they're kind of, you know, the mid early to mid teenage years. When did you start actually traveling with them?
We decided early on in our marriage that kids were not going to throw off our travel schedule. We were very big travelers, just single and married early on. So when our daughters each hit 4 weeks old, which may be early for some people, we were on a flight with our kids and dipping their toes in the ocean or going to visit family, nothing crazy with a newborn, but we just wanted the challenge of getting out right off the bat. And even with one of our newborns, I think it was like 2 weeks, we went up to Park City and had like a little staycation just because we like to get out. We like the challenge of kids and travel. A lot of people think you have to slow down when you have kids. And we were like, nope, this isn't going to stop us. We're going to keep doing what we love. Just throw the kids in and kind of make it work.
That's super cool. So did all three kids kind of like immediately latch onto the travel life, or was one a little more hesitant, a little more, you know, I don't like being on planes, I don't like this, I don't like that, or did all three of them just embrace it immediately and they were the, you know, the sleeping on the plane the whole time, kind of perfect travel companions?
So I actually think the hardest one was our first, because I didn't know what I was doing. I don't think it had really anything to do with her. I was a very anxious mom at the very beginning and had a lot of anxiety. So my husband helped us kind of work through that. But I think all new moms, especially when you're traveling, you've got all the TSA kind of things that you think like, oh, it's a breeze to walk through TSA pre-check. But when you have a newborn, it like adds a whole other level of stress. So I was the hold up for that one. But also our first daughter did not sleep well. So it was one of those things where it could have slowed us down because she was a horrible sleeper, and like wherever we were in the world, she did not sleep well. But we kind of decided she doesn't sleep well anywhere, so we might as well be not sleeping well, you know, on a business trip in Chicago with my husband or visiting family or in Mexico or something instead. And the other kids, just our second daughter, just kind of learned to roll with it. She can sleep anywhere. And our baby, who's now 10, but she's been our easiest traveler. Like, she just kind of rolls with it, adjust his time zones really quickly. She's actually made it easier for us to travel rather than harder.
That's super cool. And I really like what you said, you know, hey, if they're having trouble sleeping, if they're staying up, if they're crying, it is much more enjoyable for that to be done while you're looking at over a beach in Mexico at a balcony, right, than just kind of sitting at home. So if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Why not enjoy the location that you're in when it happens? So exactly. That is super cool. So so tell me a little bit about the start, right? So you guys had a background in travel, both individually and sounds like when you first got together, and then you started having kids, said, hey, you know what, we're going to keep the travel going. You made that a preference. You really established that early, which I think is huge and very important for parents to do that, want to keep travel going in their life. So when did it really start branching out to, instead of the Park City, which is nearby, or visiting parents too, let's go international? And I mean, looking at your content, I know you guys also, I mean, you guys go long haul international too. So how did those stages develop? And then you start, you know, I'm going to put my kid on a 12-hour flight, right? How did that come about?
Well, it's kind of funny because we kind of looked at it as a challenge. My husband is all about like pushing yourself past your limits, and I'm more like a stay within my limits kind of person. And he was like, he had some time off with work, and we had this window where we were like, let's push ourselves and take our kids. I think our youngest was 2 at the time, and then they were kind of like 2, 4, 6. And we're like, let's go to Europe for like 4 weeks and just bounce around. We, you know, we take in the kids a little bit internationally, like to Mexico, to the beach, or like longer flights to Hawaii and that kind of thing. But nothing that really pushed us outside of our comfort zone in terms of international time zones and that kind of thing. So we were like, let's plan out, I think it was 3 to 4 weeks in Europe. And we kind of decided to take a mixture of countries that we'd been to before and countries we hadn't been to before. That way, you know, you start off with something that's comfortable to you as an adult, and then you kind of start branching out. And that way you kind of have a little bit more, you're just, it's a little bit more of a safe place initially. So that's what that was our first big international kind of trip. And our youngest daughter was awake the entire 12-hour flight. She did not sleep once.
Wow.
Which you might think is terrifying, which it was, like the idea of that was terrifying to me. But in actuality, it was fine. You know, like you have those experiences and then you're kind of like, I made it through. And our kids loved Europe. It's like any kind of other trip we'd taken. Europe is a great family friendly place to go. Anyways, we kind of picked it as a place. We went to Copenhagen, Amsterdam, London, and Paris. So we kind of picked four cities where we knew we've got a lot of kid friendly amenities. They've got the people there are just really welcoming with kids. There's lots to do. And so that was our first jump. And then after that, we started kind of challenging ourselves a little bit more. Like one of our kids was like, I love 12-hour flights. We should go to China and go on a 14-hour flight. And we thought she was crazy, but she was excited about the idea. So we, that's actually why we booked a trip to China, was because our, at the time, I think she was six or seven. She was like, I want to go to China. And I am excited about the idea of a really long flight. And we were like, okay, why not? Like we found cheap flights. Let's make it happen. China's awesome. So
very cool. So that was a really unique way to kind of get to China, right? You know, kid kind of throws it out there one last round and she's like, no, I'm serious. Like, let's go. And you guys actually go. So tell us at least a little bit about your process, right? Around planning a family trip. And I'm sure it's evolved from when the kids are 2, 4, and 6 to, I think you said 10, 13, 15 now. So I'm sure it's evolved over the years, but what's your typical process look like, or what has it been to plan out a trip, plan out your destinations, and figure out, you know, what are the family friendly accommodations and those type of things?
Okay. So it definitely has evolved. Where when our kids were younger, it was like my husband and I, kind of our bucket list or places we just wanted to go, and might as well bring kids because it's just as easy to bring kids rather than find babysitters for 2 to 3 weeks or something like that, and places that we thought they would enjoy. And then, you know, as like I mentioned before, like as it kind of went on, where we wanted to challenge ourselves and put ourselves even more outside of our comfort zone, that changed, and we kind of started creating a list of places we as a family would like to go and kind of maybe either challenge ourselves, or, you know, the kids were learning things at school that were interesting to them. So we've got a running list of places we want to go. But when it comes to like right now, logistically, a lot of the way we work it is our kids have certain school breaks. You know, we've got spring break, we've got fall break, we've got summer. We're kind of working within the guidelines of where can we go during those places. And we also want to go to unique places that maybe not everyone in the world is going at that particular time, and places where we can find good deals. So our first, you know, plan of action usually is to pick a place that's usually based on where can we get a good deal on flights. So right now that's generally what we're doing. So for example, we went to Turkey like last year for spring break, and I just saw this like amazing deal on flights to Turkey, and we were like, let's go to Turkey for spring break. Sometimes it's a place that's on our bucket list. Sometimes it's on a place, it's a place we hadn't even thought about going, but we start to dig in and research it, and we're like, oh, that place would be really fun. There's something the kids are interested in learning about, or my husband and I want to show them something. Sometimes it's a place we've been to it before and we want to take them back. So for spring break this year, we went to Spain, where I studied abroad, and our kids are learning Spanish in school because they are in a dual immersion Spanish program. So we wanted them to practice their Spanish. So that's kind of why we decided to go to Spain for spring break. So usually it's, we pick flights first, and, you know, we base that around doing a lot of research and kind of figuring out like, where do we want to start our trip and where do we want to end our trip? Because usually we try to fly into one place and out of another place, so we're not flying in and out of the same city, just to kind of maximize our time. So for spring break this year, we flew into Barcelona and then flew out of Paris, just so we could kind of hop. We went from Barcelona to Portugal and back to Paris. So I do a little bit of research in terms of what things we want to do, where we want to go, and then book flights first based on that. And then usually after that, we start looking for accommodations. Like those are kind of the two big things we start with, is like flights, good deal for flights. And then where can we find kind of cool places to stay within kind of you know, our budget for the particular trip. And we try to look for places that are family friendly, which is kind of a tricky word because a lot of people, when they think of family friendly, they think of like, oh, they've got a kids menu or they've got like baby gear or whatever. And I think that evolves as you travel. Like our kids right nowadays, they're a lot older, so we don't necessarily need those same kind of accommodations. But we look for a place where they're welcoming of kids, where they do have amenities or they have enough bedrooms and beds and that kind of thing where our kids can be comfortable, or toys that can kind of keep our kids entertained. You can find so many, nowadays you can find so many great Airbnbs and also hotels that cater to families in a lot of cities, or vacation kind of rental places. So we do a lot of research on Airbnb kind of through filters or on Google searches or through a lot of our other family travel kind of community friends on Instagram that we've made to kind of find really interesting places to stay. So when we went to Turkey, we stayed in a cave hotel in Cappadocia. And so we researched, there's tons of cave hotels there, and we researched like which ones would be great for kids, which ones have great views, walkable. A lot of times we care more about location with our kids, especially because you don't want to be taking like 5 trains to get into a city to kind of explore with your kids. So there's a lot of different things we look for now in terms of kid-friendly or family-friendly. But I think also you want to think about like what your family specifically needs at each kind of time when you're traveling. So we find family-friendly accommodations. So for example, we stayed at this one farm in Ireland that was next to a castle, but it was like this farmhouse attached to this really old castle. And you could stay in the castle, but we actually chose to stay in the farmhouse piece that had horses and chickens and dogs. And our kid, there was like a castle owner that would come over and teach our kids kind of how to feed the horses and kind of be involved in kind of the farm life. So it was just like a unique stay. Yeah, it was really cool. And it's, our kids talk about that place nonstop. It just made you feel like you really were enmeshed in the culture in Ireland. And a lot of times that's what we're looking for too, in terms of the places we pick. It's like, where can we really stay that can make us feel like we're part of this community, to give our kids a cultural kind of experience. So we usually find great places to stay. And then usually about a month out, we're researching like what to do in different cities and kind of based on what our interests are. But the way that we travel usually isn't like, let's check off all these spots to visit in a certain city or country. It's more like we really want to delve into kind of some cultural experiences, or we want to just dive into the community and pretend like we live somewhere. Like we'll go to Paris and like stay in a neighborhood that's further, a little bit further out, but where we can like get to know the local person at the bakery, and our kids can go play at the playground, and we can just feel like we live there rather than just being tourists passing by in a city. So that's kind of our general process. Yeah.
That's a really cool kind of overview there. And I love what you said about kind of immersing yourself in the culture and maybe not going to the spot that's more tourist-based, but going to the spot a little bit farther away, because there, as you said, the baker we might see on a daily basis, right? You can build that relationship versus if you're in the tourist spot where there's 1,000 people, 1,000 restaurants, and it's just a little bit more chaotic. I want to come back to something that you said earlier, because I think it would be really beneficial to touch back on, which was the point about the fact that you book your flights first. And we talk about that a lot, or actually probably not as much as we should, but in the points and miles community and talking through, you know, travel and such, a lot of our travel strategies involves, hey, plan your flights first. And I'm sure, you know, you see within friends and family that travel, right? Everyone books the accommodation first. So I would love to circle back around to just your philosophy on why flight first versus accommodation first. And you already touched on it, but I want to come back to it because I think it's a really good point to emphasize.
Yeah, flight first for us is usually the biggest spend. I mean, accommodations, yes, they are, but we're often staying in Airbnbs versus hotels. And yeah, it just really helps us logistically to figure out where we're going to be first before we dive into accommodations. Because I think there's so many different options for kinds of accommodations that you could stay at, but in terms of travel, I usually want to know, like, what particular city am I going to be going into and out of, or am I going to stay there? I want to kind of think through that itinerary piece first before I'm getting stuck on a particular hotel. Because then, you know, I don't know, it just makes more sense intuitively to me to do that. However, if we were to find some sort of like amazing resort or something, I can totally understand why you would maybe book that first. But usually for, in our case, like when we're booking, that's where we find the better deals on our ends are usually through flights. And that usually is what guides our decision-making in terms of location, not a place to stay.
Do you have a specific website or a subscription service that you use to track flight prices or timing? I know you said that you found a really great deal at Turkey. So you're like, hey, family, we're going to Turkey. Is there any specific flights, or whether it's through, for cash or points, whatever it is that you use, anything that you use to specifically to help you find these deals that come up?
So we, you know, keep an eye on like through like Scott's Cheap Flights. I remember if their name of their company's changed, but Scott. And then there's actually a location specific Instagram account to Salt Lake City called Flights From Home that they post deals, and they have like a subscription kind of service that you can get. But then where we live is a Delta hub. So we are looking Delta, and then we have a lot of Southwest out of Salt Lake. So we base a lot of our decisions on, you know, we've got some Southwest cards. We've got like Chase cards that get us Southwest points. We've got Amex cards that get us Delta points. So we're really using those two airlines the most. And we're looking for deals either money-wise or through miles on those two airlines for the most when we're traveling, especially internationally. We're looking Delta or Delta partners, just because with little kids especially, we're all about the direct flight. And Salt Lake has three usually direct flights to Europe on Delta or Air France. So we're trying to maximize our points usually for those flights, just to make it a little bit easier for ourselves.
Hey, it's DeAndre here, and we're going to interrupt this episode real quick to tell you about two great opportunities for all of you. First, join our private Facebook community to connect with fellow points and miles enthusiasts, get exclusive tips and updates, as well as get your questions answered directly by me and others in the community. And if you're looking to level up your points and miles skills, we've partnered with Lux Travel Hacks to offer you 50% off their online course that will teach you all the basics you need to know to learn how to travel in business or first class, all for less than you'd pay for economy. Don't forget to use the code BOLDLYGO at checkout. You'll find all the details and links to both of these in the show notes. Now, let's get back to our episode. Very cool. And before we go into kind of more of the travel discussion as far as destinations, because I know you guys have gone on some pretty amazing trips.
Yeah.
Are there any really specific items, gear, supplies, different things that you like absolutely is a must bring for you? And I'm going to say either for you, you and the kids when they were younger, you and the kids now, any things that really stand out that you think the listeners that have kids of all ages or differing ages, I should say, would really be like, you know what? Yeah, I want to bring that as well.
Well, the number one question we always get is, are what luggage we use. And that's like the most important thing, because we only do carry-ons nowadays. When our kids were younger, we mixed it up a little bit more, but now it's like just straight carry-on. And so we actually, for our kids, have these Amazon Basics carry-ons that are just so durable and awesome. And that we always have those. Our kids are getting older, so we don't have as much gear nowadays, but you know, it depends on, they've got like their Kindle Fires and headphones are, we always have those just for any kinds of entertainment. And this may sound funny, but as a mom, I always have shout wipes. That is a very important thing that I always bring. And then there's this awesome Downy wrinkle spray that we always take with us when we travel for like wrinkly clothes, that kind of thing. And a lot of people don't know about it, but you can just get in the travel aisle at Target, and it's like, hands down, my favorite thing to recommend to people to bring when you travel, just to avoid wrinkly clothes, lots of wrinkly clothes. But in terms of other gear, you know, we've always got our portable chargers, and my husband and I, you know, bring our laptops for getting work done and that kind of thing. But nowadays, we don't have too much with us. When the girls were little, we always had like an umbrella stroller and like an ergo baby kind of carrier. So we would put one kid in the stroller. We never brought a double stroller. One kid in the stroller and one kid in a carrier. And nowadays, there's so many cool travel strollers and that kind of thing that I wish they had had when I was having little kids. It's like they read our minds and they've created so many great things. But there's so many great travel products for families nowadays, you know, in terms of like keeping kids safe on airplanes and helping kids sleep on airplanes. There's all those like pillows and that kind of thing that I wish they'd had when we had our kids a lot younger. So, but nowadays we've kind of moved into that stage where we're like trying to minimize what we bring. So the fewer things, the better. So we kind of keep some of those just straight basics.
Awesome. And a quick question. So I know you said for the kids, you have like the Amazon basics, carry-on roller luggage.
Yeah.
For you and your husband, do you use the exact same thing or do you guys use one of the more popular brands that you kind of see bloggers and influencers talk through? Or do you have like kind of your own off the beaten path brand or luggage that you really, really love that you guys have just found really works for you?
So my husband and I think it's that you get like, you want more even more durable luggage as you kind of age with your luggage. We both have Tumi bags that are just really solid and durable, and we use those probably the most. We also try to go over to like Ross or TJ Maxx usually when there's sales going on, and we get like either Samsonite or Delsey bags that are like larger luggage for when we're going on like really long trips. But our Tumi bags have taken us all over the world. I've heard really great things about the Away bags, and maybe once my Tumi bag fails on me, I'll check into those. But so far, they're working great.
Awesome. So let's talk destinations. What you've mentioned, Turkey, you mentioned a few different places. What have been just a couple of your absolutely unforgettable, amazing destinations that you guys have done? And it could be with the whole family, with the kids, or just you and your husband, but you just stayed at a place that you were like, you know what, this can't be real life.
So one of the places we took our kids, probably, I think it was 2019. I grew up living abroad in Japan when I was a teenager. And we took our kids back to Japan. And that's probably one of our most memorable trips in terms of we got such a range of accommodations and experiences. So we stayed in this like micro apartment in Tokyo where they had one of those like huge Japanese tubs, you know, we try to fit all the kids in. And really, it's like the size of a matchbox kind of hotel. So all five of us are staying in this like teeny tiny hotel, but you felt very Tokyo. Like everyone's living in small spaces. We've got the futons on the floor. We're making it work. And then we moved on to Kyoto where we stayed in this amazing old house in Kyoto in the historic district. And the hotel it was like a boutique hotel had tatami mats everywhere. And they had those kind of fire or bed warmers they would put in your bed every night that kind of warmed your feet. And we're just walking around old Kyoto every morning and you're like the only people there because you're right in the center of it all. That was really cool. And then we stayed in a hotel in what's the name of the town in Hakone, which is right by Mount Fuji. And they had one of the Japanese onsens where you go in and you have the Japanese baths. And it was just a very traditional hotel. And our girls loved we liked picking all the different, having a mixture of different experiences within the same country and having them kind of, the fun thing for me about that trip was taking them back to where I had lived when I was in Tokyo and kind of giving them that kind of exposure of like what it had been like to be a teenager exploring around Japan. And I took him to all the places I'd been, plus all the cool places that I missed. Because when you're a teenager, you're not like thinking it's really cool to go to Kyoto. But, you know, once you go there with your kids, you're like, this is what I could have seen. I actually never went when I was a teenager. And so we took different tours and kind of showed them all the different areas of Japan. Another trip that we did that was an amazing destination or kind of location was, we've gone to Paris a lot of times. We hadn't really gone outside of Paris, so we went up to Normandy and we stayed in a castle in Normandy. It was actually the home of Alexis de Tocqueville, who wrote Democracy in America. And he has this chateau and castle grounds where you can still stay. And half of the castle is still owned by his family. We actually met his grandson or great grandson and, you know, a housekeeper. And then the other house of the hotel has been turned into like an Airbnb, but it's like 6 or 7 bedrooms. It's very true to like it was kind of built in the 16th century, but then has been updated through the centuries. So it's this very medieval castle, and they had like a dog on the grounds and a moat and then tennis courts and bicycles. And so it was like a range of this really cool historic house where one day it was raining, so we played hide and go seek in this castle, and it was just,
that sounds amazing.
One of our kids' very favorite. Yeah, it was so, I mean, it had like turret kind of stairs. There was a little element of that at night. The kids were like, is this place haunted? You know, because it was like, there's like paintings on the wall of people staring at you. And but it's one of, and it's close to all these beautiful seaside towns in Normandy. So we, you know, drive in the daytime to go to these markets in town or go see some D-Day sites, kind of because that was the area where we were staying, and then come back to this amazing castle. It's probably one of the most memorable places we've stayed recently that our kids would love to go back to. So a lot of really cool places. I could keep going.
Oh, I'm sure you, I mean, with what you put on Instagram and such, I mean, I see a lot of the cool destination you guys go to. So I absolutely believe, I mean, we could share stories for hours and I could listen to kind of some of these really cool destinations. But as we start to go in the direction of wrapping up, I actually wanted to ask you, so you've mentioned a few times different types of stays and accommodations that are a little bit different, right? You haven't mentioned the Hyatts, the Hiltons, the Marriotts, et cetera, et cetera. You talk more about the Airbnbs or staying in a castle or a farmhouse next to a castle, a really eclectic, really unique stays. My question for you is, at least, was that dictated more by your desire to just kind of do something different, be in a different location, or did the fact that in Europe and Asia, there's a lot stricter rules on occupancy in hotels and such, and you know, certain places with a family of five, you'd have to have essentially like 3 rooms, right? 2 to 3 rooms. So is it a mixture of those two things, or was the occupancy really not a concern and it was really just kind of having these eclectic stays?
So it's definitely a mixture of the two. For sure, you can get a lot more space in an Airbnb than sometimes you can get in a hotel. But in Europe and Asia especially, the rules on occupancy are definitely a huge, huge deterrent for sometimes, you know, why we choose Airbnbs or VRBOs. It's interesting. In the US, we tend to do a lot more hotel stays. And then outside the US, we tend to do a lot more VRBOs and Airbnbs because the nature of the pricing is a lot different in the US versus, you know, Europe or Asia sometimes. At the same time, we're actually starting to branch into, now that our kids are a little bit older and they can have a little bit more autonomy and where we don't care about like, okay, we can have adjoining rooms or like they can have a room down the hallway or something. We're starting to kind of find ourselves branching back into hotels. Where it fits. Like we actually just stayed at this amazing Hyatt in Seattle and that fit us great. So some of it is for us, it's like, it depends on the location and it depends on what we're looking for. So in a lot of cases where we're looking for, you know, that cultural experience where we want to feel like we're part of the community, you're going to get that a lot more when you're staying in an Airbnb or a Vrbo, depending on where you're going. But in places where, you know, we're trying to be more in the city or visiting a lot more touristy spots, that's when we tend to stay more towards hotels because obviously they are more locally, like more centrally located. It makes for less walking and we can see more things quickly. Or if we're staying in we want to stay close to the airport or that kind of thing. So it really depends on what we're doing, why we choose those. But we do like looking for unique boutique hotels as well. that give us that feeling of home rather than, you know, just feeling like we're one of the crowd.
Awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. So what would be some of the tips that you would, you know, give to that family that's, you know, looking to figure out how can they travel more, right? They might have kids and they might not have done what you did, which was, okay, you know, 4 weeks old, let's go, right? They might have been a little bit more hesitant, but they're hearing, you know, people like yourself speaking, they're seeing content out there of other travelers. What would you suggest to them to get started, how they could start traveling more as a family?
That's a great question. So I think a lot of times we think, we look at people online and we're like, oh, I've got to do X, Y, and Z right now while my kids are little. I think it's important to kind of start small, start with where you're at. So if that means, like us at the beginning, you're visiting family, or you're doing road trips, or you're going to national parks, or you're going camping, like those are all traveling. You can be doing all of those things and kind of build up to some of these experiences if that's what you're looking for. I think each family kind of needs to look at themselves and decide, like, what do we want for our kids and ourselves, and then start building from there. I think it's also important to realize it's not cheap, and for me to be like, oh, everyone should be traveling like we are. You know, it takes to, you have to get to a certain point to be able to do that. And some of it's kind of like this, the stuff you share on your account, which is being smart about points and miles. Like, we've always had miles that we've been accumulating. My husband had accumulated so many miles before we got married that we were essentially traveling free for the first, I don't know, 10 years of our marriage on Southwest, till they changed a lot of the Southwest, the way Southwest does the Rapid Rewards program.
That's awesome.
So there's certain things. Yeah, it was, it's so awesome. And we only, I think when our kids were little, we only flew Southwest for that reason, really, until we started doing a lot more international. But I think start building up those points and miles, and then also start small and start kind of experimenting with what your family likes. And if you're scared to try something outside your comfort zone, like sometimes it helps to just go as a couple first and try out that country. My husband and I did that a few times where we'd go to a different country or a place where we wanted to take our kids. We went first, kind of got the lay of the land, and then took our kids. Because like adults and kids all trying a new place when you're anxious about it can sometimes lead to disaster. So just ease yourself in. I think that's the number one thing I would say, is don't look at people around you and be like, oh, I need to be traveling with all my kids to Southeast Asia for spring break, if you haven't really been taking a road trip before, right? Start where you're at and then build on that, and start kind of thinking about the future and the kind of travel you want to do, and make decisions like getting your kids enrolled in like frequent flyer programs, or start building up the points and miles for your family. And then you'll have those capabilities when you're ready to do it.
That's, I mean, that's such a great explanation. You know, kind of start with where you are. Don't try to go to Asia for spring break if you haven't taken a road trip before, and grow from there. I've got to ask, and I'm going to just make a complete assumption here. I know at the beginning of the show, you had said that you had like a lot of anxiety around kind of flying and traveling with, I don't know if it's just your first kid, but, you know, specifically early on, you know, a lot of anxiety around traveling with a kid, and then, you know, kids to boot. Would you say that over time, just the natural reoccurrence of traveling, of just saying, all right, I'm just going to get out there and do it, that helped it? I assume over time, the anxiety has gone down as obviously the kids have gotten older, but also as you guys have done it more.
For sure. Yeah. And originally, like, the anxiety, and I've talked to so many moms on my Instagram that have anxiety about traveling with kids. Just the nature of kids are unpredictable, and you have to be really flexible when traveling. It can be stressful because you have no control over a lot of circumstances. And moms with young kids spend a lot of time trying to control their circumstances. So when you add in flying and traveling, you're just like, ah, this is like the worst case scenario. So for me, for sure, once we started doing it a lot, and I think that was part of what really helped us, is we were traveling monthly with little kids from the time each of our kids were 4 months old. So I still had anxiety every time I added a new kid, because it meant change and things were, you know, we had to adjust. But it's definitely gotten easier as my kids have gotten used to traveling more. I also think the earlier you start your kids, the more they're just used to being on planes. They know how to behave. They know how to act in a car. They know how to be in public. So naturally, some of the behaviors change too to make you less anxious. And I've told moms also, like, sometimes you just have to, like, prepare before any trip and just do breathing exercises and meditation to kind of help prepare yourself to work through it. Because maybe you're naturally an anxious person, and travel can, especially nowadays, travel is so up and down with all the delays and other things. Like, you really have to go into it with the right headspace. So there's nothing wrong with admitting you have some anxiety and kind of getting some coping strategies to help yourself with that too.
So sometimes you just gotta woosah the moment and go. Love it. Elise, before we wrap up here, for you and the family, what's coming up next? What's on the docket as far as travel goes here? Any big destinations? I know you said that you have this running list of places you want to go. And if you're like myself, that list never ends. In fact, it grows faster than we can, you know, check it off. But what's coming up next for you guys here that we're going to get to see in your stories and travels here over the next few months?
So we're going as a family to Washington, D.C. this summer. So that'll just be kind of a fun family trip that's coming up. But then my husband and I both each try to do sometimes like a solo trip every year. So I'm actually going to Switzerland with a fellow travel blogger and some of her kind of a group that she's put together. And my husband's going to Mongolia with another travel blogger and a group he's put together. And then we're hoping to take the kids this spring, they are really wanting to go to Italy. So we're either Italy, or we had this epic trip planned to Singapore, Thailand, and Bali for March 2020 that got, you know, epically COVID-ed. Canceled.
Yep.
Yes. So I'm still trying to make that happen. I've got like I've got the whole itinerary and the hotels, and I just want to make that happen. So that's my next bucket list hope. But, you know, usually come August when I'm looking at flights for spring break, that can totally change depending on what I see and if we get kind of excited about something else.
No, that's super cool. So I've said on the show before, Thailand, one of my favorite countries, if not favorite countries ever. So you absolutely have to make that happen. Actually, my fiance Tara and I, we're actually leaving for Bali and Singapore in just a couple of weeks. I think actually when this episode airs, we might actually be there. I think that's super excited to get back to Asia, but I'm excited to also see your trek through Switzerland. I think that's going to be really cool as well. So, I mean, you guys have some really great destinations in mind. If you do take the family to Italy and you go to, if you do spend any time in Rome at all, I actually posted a video about this on my page, but there's a really, really unique food experience, just an hour north in Bracciano. Where the short version is you actually meet with the guy who will pick you up from the train station. He'll take you out into the forest with his truffle hunting dogs. They'll forage for truffles. And then you will go back to his house where he's got a full spread, and he'll cook you a 10-course meal of all truffle things from the truffles that you just picked. And it's a really, really cool experience. Kid friendly as well. And so that was a really unique like experience getting out of the city, getting into the Italian, you know, farmland. If you get a chance, that it would be an incredible experience. And his Instagram is Matteo Truffles. And he's got really, really good, just like, if you love truffles, wine and food, you're going to have a great time.
Wow, that sounds amazing. Yeah, my kids would love that, plus the dogs.
Plus, there's a myriad of dogs that just want to be pet constantly. It's great. We had a very hard time leaving.
Awesome,
Elise. Where can the listeners follow you? You put out a lot of great stuff, a lot of great tips. And then you said moms are always reaching out to you and you're giving them advice. Where are all the ways that listeners can follow you, connect with you, see your family travels and all the tips that you have to offer?
So the best way to find us is on Instagram at the number 3kidstravel. And then we also have a website, 3kidstravel.com. That's usually where we kind of post like scavenger hunts or coloring pages or just kind of our top 10 list of places to go in different countries or packing lists, that kind of thing. But Instagram is the main place you can follow us. And we've got tons of cities saved of itineraries of different things we've done.
Very nice. My two final last questions I always like to ask at the end of the show. First, who else should we have next on the show?
So I've got three people I was thinking would be good for your show. Christina from Max Explore. So she's actually who I'm going to Switzerland with. She plans like amazing group trips.
Oh, cool.
Sometimes family travel trips, but she just got back actually, I think, from somewhere in Southeast Asia, the Philippines maybe. And then Vanessa from the Wanderlust Crew. She was my very first Instagram family travel friend. And she has taken her kids all over the world. And then another person would be Jody from Parents Who Travel. And they share some family travel, but also it's like parents going on these cool trips all around the world. So
we're going to reach out to them. I would love to have all three of them on the podcast. And it would be really cool because if we've got, I think it was Christina you said that's doing the trip to Switzerland. I would love to hear the after about that trip and get some notes of what to do in Switzerland, because that is a place that is on my bucket list as well. Elise, this was wonderful. You shared a lot of great information today. Any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
No, I'm just so excited to have your followers kind of learn more about kids travel and family travel if they want. And I just really appreciate the opportunity to chat today. It's been awesome.
Well, thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for showing us the way of how you've been able to get your kids to travel from the young age of 4 weeks old to all the way now to 15 years old. And you still have a few more kids that are just, as they get older, you've adapted. Right. And I think the advice around just get started, you don't have to go across the other side of the world in order to start traveling with kids. It can be something very simple, something more local, go on that road trip. I think those are great. And I know based on what you share on your profile, the itineraries you have and the links on your website, you're going to have a lot of great content for our listeners to unpack as well. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
So for the listeners out there, if you love Elise's story, please make sure to give her a follow. And as always, don't forget to like, subscribe to our podcast if you haven't already. We do these videos. The full episode is on YouTube as well. And please, as always, if you like the content, please drop us a rating for the show also. You know, it helps the algorithm, helps do all the things and all the things of technology and how it works, help us find more people. But in general, love that you took the time to listen to Elise's story. Elise, love that you are here to share your story. And as always, for listeners, we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.